You're listening to episode 85 of the FitsPro podcast, and today's episode, when I was debating what to create an episode about, what question I wanted to answer, or what tips I wanted to share with you guys, I just opted to do what I am calling a fitness mashup. And essentially, I am busting myths and answering questions that I have received over the years, over the 10 plus years of being in the fitness industry, questions that I had myself at times. And so hopefully this will be a fun episode for either trainers or trainees alike. Without further ado, let's dive in.
The FitsPro podcast is your no BS approach to seeking out truth in the world that is online health and fitness. You'll see through the lens of the trainer, the trainee, and the entrepreneur. I'm your host, Annie Miller, certified strength and conditioning specialist, entrepreneur, lover of sleep, lattes, and dinosaurs, aka not your average FitsPro. And my aim is to help you grow your mind, body, and business through knowledge and authenticity so that you too can become a FitsPro.
Please remember that you need to check the show notes to see if you were the reviewer of the week, and then also keep an eye out to see if you were the listener of the month as well. That person gets 50% off any non-membership program of mine, as well as a freebie from Frey Skincare, and that will be in the show notes and again in Annie's weekly wrap, and you could subscribe to that at anniemiller.co/news. So like I said in the intro, this episode is a compilation of questions that I have received over the years, or as of lately, receiving, you know, several of the same question tells me that I should probably answer it on a larger platform than just a one-on-one basis. So while each of these could nearly be an individual episode, I kind of dig the mashup vibe, right? Just throwing it all at you at once. This is kind of throwing the fitness kitchen sink at you. So rapid fire Q&A debunking session, call it what you want. You are about to get a lot of information. So before we do get into it, we will be covering what is a shock phase, what causes muscle soreness and muscle burn, what causes the muscle pump, will cardio ruin strength or muscular gains, should you do cardio before or after a lift? Can you gain muscle while losing fat at the same time? Strength and hypertrophy set in rep schemes. Can you gain strength without gaining muscle? And is HILIT, which is high intensity, low impact training, a thing? And if so, how? What might that look like? So we are going to dive into all of that. Hopefully this episode won't drag on too long, but also hopefully you get some really good information from it. So starting off right away, what is a shock phase? So I mentioned this in my stories a week ago when I re-entered the gym for the first time in over 7 months. Yes, the last time that I touched a barbell was January 12th when we were in Mexico City when we started our world travels. Since that day, I had not been in a gym during our world travels or had a gym when I got back to the States from those world travels. So it was over 7 months without a barbell. First off, it's very important for you to grasp what a shock phase is and when you can expect it. So a shock phase, would be after a new week of training where your body is undergoing several new types of stimulus or levels of stimulus. So when I came back to the gym after a several month long break, I was increasing all factors of my training by default at the same time. I was increasing load, intensity, volume, and tempo, all of them. Normally within a program, as you progress month to month, you're altering, you know, one to two of those. You are not increasing all of them at one time. So this, with the context that I had only been doing at-home workouts with a 25-pound kettlebell at most, even if I were to only use an empty barbell for all exercises when I re-entered the gym, I would be nearly doubling my load. Are we tracking? Are we seeing where the shock phase would come in at? It is called a shock phase because you have an abnormal response to your training stimulus. This normally results in a very high level of soreness abnormal levels of soreness. And we can expect this in the first week coming back to an, you know, quote unquote, old normal style of training or modality of training. You can also expect that you will not be anywhere near as sore the following week, which is why it's called a shock phase. It's like your body is getting shocked. Like I said, it is an abnormally intense response to new training, yet it feels like your body adapts by the next week. So literally, like the first week coming back to training in the gym, I took it very, very moderately. I posted all of this in my Instagram stories, lighter weight than I've literally ever used in the gym. I only did 3 exercises, and my legs were sore for almost 6 days. The next week, I did the same exact thing, added weight in 2 of the exercises, and added an exercise to my total, to my workout. So at the end of my squat day, I added some quad extensions in as well. I was maybe 10% as sore, barely sore at all the next week. So just to give you some context as far as what a shock phase can look like. So perhaps you have experienced this. It doesn't have to, you know, be that you have taken a long break from training necessarily. That's the example I'm using because that is what's happening in my life currently. But it can just be any time that a large new stimulus is introduced to the body. For instance, even if I was very well trained in strength from a strength perspective, like, you know, squats, deads, bench, overhead pressing, if I was strong in all of those and I went to a gymnastics clinic, I would be devastatingly sore the week after. It wasn't that I wasn't strong, it was just that I experienced this high level of new stimulus. But if I kept going another week or two and did the same exact thing, I would be far less sore, like significantly less sore. So that should hopefully paint a picture of the shock phase and what it can look like and what you can expect with that. So moving into what causes soreness and muscle burn. First off, lactic acid doesn't make you sore or cause the burning sensation in your muscles as far as the data in the science and the literature that we have right now. Micro tears in your muscle fibers is what causes soreness, is what causes that pain sensation. Hydrogen ion buildup creates the burning sensation that you feel during a lift. That's also not lactic acid or even lactate. And we'll get into lactate. Lactate is produced at the same time that hydrogen ions are released, but it is the hydrogen ions that make the pH more acidic in the muscle, which is why you feel that burning sensation. So ATP is, and I've talked about this before, ATP is our muscle energy power source, right? It's what we need for our muscles to function, to contract. ATP, which is adenosine triphosphate, is produced through a process called glycolysis. Okay? Glycogen metabolism. Hydrogen ions are formed as a byproduct of glycolysis. This is a factor in muscle fatigue, as well as the burning sensation that you feel due partially to the pH imbalance in the muscle. So when oxygen is not present, so we're in an anaerobic state, we have anaerobic phosphorylation. This uses the Cori cycle, and this is where lactate is produced during glycolysis, as well as the hydrogen ion. ATP is produced, as with oxygenation, but lactate is also being produced. Then it's transported, lactate is transported to the liver to be turned back into glucose so that more energy, aka ATP, can be produced. Yay, science! Hopefully you're tracking that. If not, seriously, Google it. You can find charts and diagrams that show you how that entire glycolysis and the production of ATP happens, which is honestly not that difficult to understand if you are looking at a diagram. So if you want to learn more, go ahead and look it up. Bottom line, your delayed onset muscle soreness, DOMS, nor the burning sensation are from lactic acid or even lactate. DOMS is from muscle damage, which is those little micro tears in the muscle fibers. And the burn is primarily from the production of hydrogen ions as a byproduct of creating ATP so your muscle can contract. Capiche? Hopefully we understand. Moving on to what causes the muscle pump. So we're going to stay inside the muscle for this next section. The main factor, and this is going to be short, the main factor in a muscle pump is fluid and blood being literally pumped into the muscle faster than it can be cleared out. Yes, there is also a temporary shortening of the muscle after several contractions, but the main cause is going to be really just that your muscle is filling with blood and fluid. So this all makes the muscle feel tight, but your actual muscle as a fibrous tissue is not getting larger. Okay, it's being inflated with blood. Think like a sponge would be. So this makes a lot of sense if you think about the fact that the muscular system literally functions like a pump, right? It's called the muscle pump. So as your muscles contract and relax, they help move fluid and blood throughout the body. When we continuously contract and relax one group of muscles, right? And the muscle is increasing a flow of blood to that particular muscle due to normal flow, but also increased oxygen demand to that muscle. And then, like I said, it's coming in faster than it can be cleared out, which again leads to that tight feeling inside your muscle and what we consider as the muscle pump, which is also why it disappears, right? Your muscle pump wears off because the blood is cleared, the blood and the fluid is cleared from that muscle over time. So moving on to, will cardio ruin your strength or muscular gains? In short, no, for the most part. It depends, of course. So at some point, yes, training for endurance will plateau or hold back your potential strength and power gains, but you can certainly have hybrid results for a pretty large span on the spectrum from endurance to strength. And I will always go back to your ability to recover from your training and fuel that training properly. If you're able to eat enough of the right foods and recover well enough, your body will create adaptations from both the strength training and the conditioning that you are doing. Look at elite CrossFit athletes, for example. There are plenty of CrossFit athletes that run within a 6-minute mile range or could wake up and run a half marathon per se with no problem and place decently high while also squatting double their body weight or more. And yes, I am talking about men and women on both sides here. This can happen because one, they are eating enough food, they are prioritizing recovery, and I guarantee they are making sleep the top priority. I say guarantee. I don't know what they're doing, but I would imagine that they are making sleep a top priority, fuel, and stress management. They're also training 4 to 6 hours per day. LOL. But the same rules still apply. We only make gains on what we can properly recover from, right? Our body has to recover in order to adapt to our training. So it's not that, you know, endurance is going to hinder your strength. At some point, yes. If you were only training strength, you could get stronger than if you were training strength and endurance at the same time. But if you can, you know, recover properly from all of the training that you're doing, you should be able to make gains in both endurance and strength for a pretty good period of time. And that leads into the next question that I don't think I will ever stop getting, and that is whether you should do cardio before or after your lift. It depends. Both are fine, but it does depend on your goals. If at all possible, these are completely separate. So you would separate your strength training from your cardio, and you would train for strength at, you know, one point in the day and allow your body to rest, maybe eat a meal, and then you would do your conditioning at a different point in the day. I simply suggest doing the strength training early on in the day because the human growth hormone levels and testosterone levels are higher in the morning. And obviously we can optimize those with our strength training, especially for women. So honestly, it's not making or breaking your results. Don't worry too much about it. Do whatever is sustainable and realistic for you when it comes to your training timing. I realize some people can't lift until they get off work. It's fine. lifting in the afternoon is far better than not lifting at all, so don't stress. If you have to do cardio and strength in the same session back to back, most of the time I suggest doing your strength training first and your cardio after. And this is the most efficient route in my professional opinion. The conditioning doesn't wear you out before your strength session. And then if you do strength work first, accumulation effect is working in your favor when you get to the cardio. So accumulation effect means that basically you won't have to work as hard in your cardio in order to keep your heart rate up because it will already be elevated from the strength training session, right? So, but it will likely slow your ability to recover in a timely manner because of the same accumulation effect. So, you know, it has the potential to do so anyway. This also depends on what type of cardio or conditioning you're doing, right? There's tons of context here to consider, but if conditioning is your main goal and focus for training, then of course do that first when you are fresh and go into your strength training after your conditioning. It's simple as that, but for the most part, separate them if you can. That's optimal. Do the strength training before the cardio. That's next. And then if obviously the cardio is your main objective, then do that first. All right. Can you gain muscle and lose fat at the same time? Will this question ever not be asked? Will people ever not ask this question? We don't know. It hasn't happened yet. So this is essentially asking if you can be in a bulk and a cut phase at the same time. Do we realize that? That's what we're asking here. Can we gain muscle and lose fat at the same time? Can I bulk and cut at the same time? When we ask it that way, it makes it pretty clear that the answer is no. No, you may not do that. So anytime we are putting on muscle mass, you are likely going to put on some adipose tissue, some fat as well. So you're going to gain muscle mass, yes, but also some fat with it. That's natural, depending on the amount of muscle mass you put on. Although you're not losing fat, you could be improving your overall body composition due to the increase in muscle mass compared to fat mass. Hopefully that makes sense to you. So you're not losing fat, but you may be gaining more muscle than you are fat, so you are improving your body composition. These are two separate things. Aside from actual muscle gain or fat loss, it's possible in this process to, you know, look better or for your body to change shape due to the new musculature, which I can say that I am a fan of personally, right? So I don't care, and this is personal, when I'm putting on muscle, I realize that I'm going to put on some fat, but I like the shape that my body takes on better when I do that than just, you know, staying slender altogether. I would rather have more muscle and a little cushion that comes with it. But again, that's personal and has nothing to do with you. So the idea when you cut body fat is to maintain as much muscle mass in that process as possible for most people anyway. So again, you cannot technically be in a bulking phase and a cutting phase at the same time. You may be putting on muscle and putting on less fat than muscle, which again can increase your body, can improve your body composition, but you are not likely gaining muscle and losing fat at the same time. So next up is set and rep schemes for strength versus hypertrophy and so on. I posted about this recently on the gram. So there is a large continuum of sets and rep possibilities and combinations. When we look at the continuum of sets and reps, you have power at one end and endurance at the other. Okay, so picture that, a single line continuum. One end is power, think 1 to 3 reps, and the other end is endurance, so 12 to 15 plus reps. Now, these are just reps. This could be for 7 sets, this could be for 8 sets, this could be for 2 sets, right? So keep that in mind as well. But between these two, between power and endurance, we have strength and hypertrophy. For those who do not know, hypertrophy is muscle growth, literally gaining muscle, which is a goal for a lot of humans. And it is much harder than people, particularly women, think it is to do. while strength is towards the power end of the continuum. So think 3 to 6 reps, right? Power was 1 to 3 reps. Strength is typically, quote unquote, 3 to 6 reps. Hypertrophy can happen through a much larger span of reps. And this is because the main factor in muscle growth is mechanical tension. And mechanical tension can happen in strength rep schemes all the way up to 12 plus reps. If you're using a challenging load and progressively pushing that mechanical tension, then you have potential for muscle gain and hypertrophy. So that is very oversimplified, but the point is that strength requires a tighter rep scheme, right, than hypertrophy, generally speaking. So to increase strength, you'll likely need to consistently be working at least at 75% plus of your max. And this is simply not required for hypertrophy. So this is also why I say Built by Annie is a strength and hypertrophy program, because we work with a large set and rep scheme for accessory work. But for the main sets in most of the programs, the focus is simply strength. So that tighter 3 to 6, 3 to 7 rep scheme, or we progress to that strength and strength rep scheme throughout the year-long programming. So for instance, Premium 1 starts with basically endurance and capacity training, and then it progresses down to training for strength in those tighter rep schemes. Next up, kind of sticking to the strength and the hypertrophy, is can you gain strength without gaining muscle? So one of my one-on-one clients asked me this, and I think it's a simple yet fantastic and fair question to ask. To start, muscle mass is the potential for strength. Okay, so the more muscle mass someone has, the larger potential to build strength that that person has. Just as strength is a prerequisite for power, hypertrophy is a prerequisite for strength. Okay, are we tracking with that? Hopefully we're tracking with that. With this, of course, it depends. Strength is a skill. I'm going to say that again. Strength is a skill. It's not as simple as gain more muscle, get more strength, right? If you have maximized your strength ability with your given muscle mass, then yes, in theory, you would need to put on more muscle mass to potentially increase your strength or your potential for strength. But for most Gen Pop, we need to just train for strength. So much of strength training is actually training the central nervous system, training and grooving your neuromuscular pathways, and then adding load and adapting to that training. So yes, muscle mass is needed for strength. Literally, we can't have strength without muscle mass, but you can definitely increase strength without having to put on more muscle by simply training the skill of lifting heavy and whatever movement patterns you're using. So especially if you're not an elite athlete, if you have very low muscle mass, then perhaps, yes, you will need to put on muscle mass to bring up that strength. So hopefully that makes sense. Yes, you need muscle for strength, but you can increase strength with your current muscle mass without having to put on more. Next up is actually another question that I got from a one-on-one client of mine who sent me a post on Instagram, and she was asking if the post was real, if it was a thing, and that was high intensity, low impact training. Is it even a thing? Short answer, yes. Don't jump down my throat, first off, right? So like I said, one of my clients sent me a post that listed a workout as high intensity, low impact training, and my client was like, is this a thing? I voice messaged her back after reviewing the post, the exercises, all of that stuff. What the influencer had posted was definitely not high intensity, low impact training, but high intensity, low impact training does exist. And we must first understand what high intensity and low impact are defined as. So essentially anything from 75% to 90% max heart rate to 90% of a VO2 max, that is what you would consider high intensity. So I would say, above 80% max heart rate for all relatively fit humans would be high intensity. So you are heavily taxing the heart and the lungs, the cardiorespiratory system. That is very important to grasp. 80% max heart rate for most relatively fit humans. Again, that's because you're heavily taxing the cardiorespiratory system, that particular system. I am making that clear for a reason. Now, if you were to go and Google low impact exercise definition, you guys, the answers are hilarious, but also so confusing. Like, it is no wonder why people are confused. Dr. Google is great for some things and fucking an embarrassment for other things. So for the sake of this explanation, I am defining low impact as specifically referring to joints, the skeletal system. Okay? I say this because a movement with low impact on the skeletal system could have a high impact on the cardiorespiratory system. We are not robots. It's very important to distinguish the difference between these two systems, and I think that's something that people miss quite often. If the two can coexist, then put simply, high intensity, low impact training can indeed be a thing. And I want you to think about exercises like slow sled pulls or prowler pushes. One foot is on the ground at all times, right? We do not have a high impact there, but your heart rate will be through the roof. Your muscles will be burning. A slow-paced 5-minute walking lunge with a weight vest on is another great example. The Versa Climber. If you've ever used a Versa Climber, you know that it's low impact, but it is also death at the same time. So, in fact, much thinking about it, high-intensity continuous training could be considered high-intensity low-impact training. A 20-minute stair climb with a weight vest. High-resistance cycling. Not high impact, very high intensity. So these are, you know, some of the exact same methods that I personally used in college for what could be considered high intensity, low impact training. My heart rate was, you know, well into the 180s. I was winded. And there was also low impact on my joints, which by a lot of websites is defined as, you know, having one foot on the ground at all times. So think of someone, with a pelvic floor weakness or dysfunction. You would ask as a good trainer, you know, how might I get their heart rate up and respiration in the higher zones, that 80 to 85% zone, without high impact on their joints, without sprinting, jumping, plyometric movements. It's a reasonable question. And a fair question to ask. And essentially, you're asking, how can we elicit a high-intensity cardiorespiratory response while keeping low impact on the skeletal system? Oh, yeah, it exists. Most of what you see on Instagram as high-intensity low-impact training is not legitimately high-intensity low-impact training, just like most of what you see on Instagram listed as HIIT training is not actually HIIT training. But my hope is that, you know, these examples and explanation give you the skills to differentiate what is and what is not considered high-intensity low-impact training. That is all I have for this mashup, my friends. It was fun for me to create this and kind of pop off on these topics. If you enjoyed it, be sure to head over to iTunes and leave a 5 stars for the show and a written review. It is much appreciated. And remember that I also choose a reviewer of the week and a reviewer of the month that receives 50% off any non-membership program of mine, as well as a freebie from my favorite skincare company, which is Frey Skincare. You can always use my code FDBA to save 15% at least, and of course, keep an eye out for their monthly promos. If you are not on my main mailing list, make sure you are, because there are exclusive podcast listener discounts at the bottom. And let me tell you, people be taking advantage of those. I love seeing it. People be purchasing with the podcast listener discount. So go team. Until next time, I am Annie Miller, and thank you so much for listening to the FitzPro podcast.